Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com. Today we'd like to send a special thank you to the following restaurants for supporting No Goat Left Behind: Vinegar Hill House, Purple Yam, and Roberta's. Show your support at these restaurants by ordering one of the menu items featuring goat. Goat is the most eaten protein in the entire world, yet in the US we import most of our goat. Our dairy farms are forced to kill some male goats at birth because there's no market for them. Help make a change. Support No Goat Left Behind.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tune.
Give too much of that away because we're going to hear that in its entirety later on the show. That's Soho 808, all lowercase, one word. Very Googleable, as we have discussed in last
week. Oh, is that a tune amount?
That's a tune amount.
Welcome to Snacky Tunes.
Welcome to Snacky Tunes with a now fixed microphone arm, which I snapped last week. But before we get into the show, I want to send.
Is this last episode?
Yeah. I want to send a big, big congratulations shout out to our friend Ben Shapiro.
Whoop whoop.
AKA B-Shap, who just got his first article published in the New Yorker. Yeah, Little Star. But he just got his first article published in the New Yorker today. Illustration and everything.
That's so appropriate.
In the All About Town. So we're very proud of him. He's amazing. Congratulations, Ben. I can't wait to read it.
I'm going
to
give him a hug.
Yeah. Oh, I already gave him like 9 hugs. But
it's about this illegal cigarette shop run by cops on the Lower East Side.
Questionably legal, but
murky gray. So welcome to Snacky Tunes.
We'll have interviews and more, and you'll hear all of Reach off the Worst Record Company comp and other tunes from that, along with a live set from Soho 808, Nathaniel J. Esquire. I added the Esquire.
He's looking
that's my
and we have to say probably sharpest dressed DJ ever.
Yeah, I honestly asked if he just came from work, and he was like, this is how I do it, which made me embarrassed.
He went, please.
Oh, please.
I'm
this
at
is,
work.
He's like, this is Monday.
Yeah.
This is like Monday afternoon. It's not even Monday night.
So we are joined in studio with Dale Taldy and John Bush of the soon-to-be-opened Taldy Restaurant Park Slope. Boys, welcome to Snacky Toon.
Thanks for having me.
Dale is the chef owner, and John is the beverage manager and partner. You may recognize Dale from his stints at Budokan and on Top Chef as the... If you just sum up your character on Top Chef, what would it be?
I think it was the token Asian guy.
Yeah, but I mean, you had your one character on the first season, and then you were...
Well, I was angry little dude first.
Right, and then you saw the show.
Fat, remorseful guy second.
Okay. Yeah, you didn't look fat.
Yeah, I put on some weight, but yeah, I don't know. I was kind of born again the second time around.
Born again?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's tough because not only does that, like, you see some things about you on camera, but they definitely edit a personality.
For sure.
Out of everything, and it's tough. It's tough to see yourself on TV sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, giving credibility to the show, they never tell you to say, you know, it's they just... put on TV what you've done. So if you want to be a jackass on TV, then they're going to put, you know, in real life, then they're just going to put it on TV. It's not like they formulate an idea to make this guy look like a jerk.
Yeah.
If you're a jerk in real life, then it's just going to translate onto TV.
Yeah. Now, one of the things we were talking about that I think a lot of people in the industry have loved about you is that Top Chef was just a gig you did, and then you went right back in the kitchen because you have been in the kitchen your entire life. Talk about your family. You grew up in Chicago,
yep.
Right? And your parents were Filipino immigrants, mm-hmm. And I think you got a lot of your influence starting in their kitchen, right?
Yep. You know, I'm a first-generation American. My parents grew up in the Philippines. I grew up in Chicago, in the north side of Chicago, represent.
Bulls fan?
Bulls fan, Bears fan, and embarrassingly enough, a Cubs fan, but...
Are you a Blackhawks fan?
Not a lot of Asian dudes in hockey, so
just
I mean,
one.
That wasn't my thing.
And he's standing
they
he's
did,
right
they,
here.
They
Kong,
did, they
Kong
did.
Is the only Asian.
I know. And it always trips me out. He's from Florida. He's Vietnamese, and he's down with hockey. But, you know, got to give it to my Bears. They won yesterday. But, I'm a Chicago dude. Yeah,
Chicago dude.
But I'm a Chicago dude, and I grew up. I went to culinary school at 19. Came back to Chicago. Cooked there. In Chicago, and then came out to New York in about 2005, and you know, I opened Morimoto, and then I moved over to Budokan, and I've been with the company ever since, like about 3 months ago.
When that's Star, right?
Yeah, with Star Restaurant Group.
Now, I think the thing that because we've had Chef Brian Ray on here before, and everybody says about Budokan is that it's better than it has to be.
Mm-hmm.
And can you talk about your time at Budokan and you know working with them and really taking like. What has become synonymous with the Meatpacking District, but elevating it to like a restaurant that's just as good as any other
sure.
restaurant?
I think a lot of what Steven Sarr's, I think his mantra is with a lot of his restaurants in his group is that you're under-promising and over-delivering, is that his food doesn't have to be as good as it is. And with a lot of his restaurants, they're very stylized, they're hip, you know, they're really cool to be in. Like, aesthetically, they're beautiful to walk into. He puts a ton of money into his restaurants. And he also puts a ton of money into the way he puts his food together. And he's one of those guys who just does not quit to be the best. And, you know, I took a little bit of that with me into Taldy, is that the idea of under-promising and over-delivering. Is that I love that idea of coming to some place, not thinking it's going to be a lot, and then getting blown away.
Now, before we go into Brooklyn versus New York, let's go back to Chicago. And you worked at a ton of great restaurants there, and I think that's where you really started learning about restaurants and developing relationships with farmers. What's the difference in working in a Chicago restaurant versus working in a New York restaurant?
I think just the sheer numbers is that, you know, if you open up a 180-seat restaurant in Chicago and you do 360 carvers, you turn the restaurant over twice, that's a good night.
Yeah.
In New York... 180 seats, you turn it up, you turn your tables twice, that's not enough.
You need like at least three?
You got to do three turns in a restaurant like that. Just the sheer numbers and the spotlight that's in New York City, that New York City has as opposed to Chicago. When you open a restaurant in New York and you're a bigger name like that, or if you're a bigger restaurant like that, right from the open, you hire maitre d's to make sure that they know every food blogger, every reviewer, every person that's out there, so you can have the best press as possible. And in Chicago, they have some of that, but it's just a little more like it's more hometowny.
But
I feel
Chicago's a little bit more experimental.
It is.
I would say that a lot of the more popular restaurants, Alenia, Avec, and so on and so forth, have a little bit more modernism.
Sure, but there is more of a hometown feel to it. Like what I love about Chicago is that, like, I love Avec. So you said Avec and Publican and a lot of Paul Kahn's places. Chicago owns those, you know, and that's why I love the translation from Chicago to Brooklyn, because I feel like Taldi and John could speak about this, is that, and even with his restaurant at Thistle, is that Brooklyn wants to own Brooklyn. Brooklyn, I feel like people who, you know, like restaurants in Brooklyn, they want to, the people in the area say, this is my restaurant. Right. Where in Manhattan, it's hard to say.
That's my coffee shop. That's like.
Exactly.
Right.
In Manhattan, it's harder to say that, especially in the meatpacking district. Like, no one's gonna say.
Who wants to rep?
Hey, Budokan. Yeah, I mean that's really hard.
No knock on Budokan kind of thing, but who's like, yeah,
exactly.
Meatpacking.
What's up?
Hey, you know Budokan's my local. It's where I go.
Nobody says
where
that.
Where everybody knows your name, right?
Yeah, no one really says that. And but with Brooklyn restaurants, it's like even Aldi La and Roberta's even here, and people, you can tell people want to say that this is my restaurant.
Yeah, like it. I mean, speaking just for us, like to say that we are part of the Roberta's Club. Yeah, it's a lot. It means a lot. It's like status.
Yeah,
it's scene points.
Uh huh.
So you moved. So you left the Star Group.
Uh huh.
Amicable terms.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody pat on the back, wishing you well.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're in Brooklyn.
Yeah, Park Slope.
Park Slope, Restaurant Row.
We are on 7th Avenue. We are on the corner of 7th Avenue, 11th Street, 369. 7th Avenue is our address. And yeah, I mean,
I can't believe you know the address.
I do. I don't know our zip code yet, though. That's so weak.
11215.
There you go.
Boom.
But
I know that.
That's a good partnership right there. That's it. You know what I like about him? He knows the zip code.
Yeah, I don't know that.
So what's the two line review? Like, if you were to compress your restaurant to two sentences, which isn't fair and on the spot, but
no, I think it's totally fair. In New York City, you kind of have to.
Elevator pitch me on your restaurant.
We are an Asian American. The cuisine is Asian American. It's modeled after my personal and professional life. It's, you know, who I am as a individual. I'm an Asian American in this country, and I've cooked is Asian food. But we're taking that to Brooklyn and saying Brooklyn ingredients, you know, encompassing what is the Northeast and what comes great out of New York State and up in Long Island, the seafood, and intertwining that with very traditional ideas of Asian dishes, like pad thai. And, you know, what do you think of pad thai? What I think of pad thai is...
greasy noodles with peanuts and egg and
My idea is that it's the ultimate brunch food. So it's got eggs. We're throwing, you know, if it is the ultimate brunch food because it has starch and it has eggs in it and it's got peanuts and it's crunchy, it's sweet and sour. I'm gonna throw bacon in it and, you know, gild the lily and put some crispy oysters on top of it.
Is it gonna look like pad thai?
Totally look like pad thai, except it's got crispy oysters on top of it and bacon, which, you know.
That's not bad. All right, so we're going to play a song, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to talk to you more about the restaurant and what it's like to be in Park Slope and the opening and hip-hop and all good things. And
cool, man.
What do we got? So this is another track off the Worst Music Ever compilation coming out on the Worst Music. But it's W-U-R-S-T. Yeah, it's a... Which is a good pun. It's a good food pun.
It's a good food pun.
It's actually pretty appropriate.
Can we also shout out Mary Gon?
Sure.
What's up, Mary?
Oh, hey. This is Pink Stallion with a track called Help Yourself.
Have a very strange reaction. one else. Sometimes you gotta help yourself, cause you can't expect it from no one else.
All right. Fantastic track. You got a mouthful of food, never forget. Look at you.
Just getting my cans back on.
Totally not. Oh, God. So we're here with John Bush and Dale Taldy of the new Taldy Park Slope restaurant. And Dale, this is your first restaurant.
Yes.
So you named it after yourself,
mm-hmm.
which is tradition.
He actually
did. I fought that tooth and nail, dude. You know,
really?
John. I fought that tooth and nail.
For the record, what did you want to name it?
I had no name. That's what it came. They're like, if you can come up with a better name by the weekend, we'll call it that.
Wait, who's they?
John Bush and Dave Masoni, my two business partners.
You don't understand how hard it is to name a restaurant.
Oh no, I mean to name anything that you hope to have like years and years of lasting.
It really was incredibly hard, and me and Dave were like scratching for names, trying to tell Dale to show off, and then out of nowhere, we were just like, what are we gonna do? Let's just call it Taldy.
And I was like, and
his face dropped when
we
said that.
Hell no! But they said as soon as they said it's the homage to your family, I'm like, oh shit!
Oh man, we're gonna say,
gut wrench. You know, like okay, twist my arm.
How do you explain the food any other way? But right there,
exactly.
No, and also it's not like I don't know. It could be your last name. It could just be a name. You know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Except
it is his last name.
let's play down that.
It's not like Smith.
We'll play down that part.
Yeah. Anyway,
it's just a name.
So, here comes the pizza. What? Up? Awesome. So, you know, even though you're opening up in Park Slope,
yep.
This is not going to be your stereotypical Park Slope restaurant, right? So let's, for those who aren't in New York or even Park Slope, what do people see when they walk through the door? What's the aesthetic like? Because I heard it's going to be something special.
You know, let me credit my business partner John Bush and Dave Masoni first for finding. We found, and I think it's better that you describe this.
There's this place called Old Good Things. Yeah, eat your pizza. There's a place called Old Good Things. It's in New York. It's a it's like they salvage wood. They salvage places. They go into places that are being torn down. They take all the fixtures, all the light fixtures, all. Mm-hmm. the tables, all the doors, all the doorknobs, like everything out of place. And I guess probably about 20 years ago, 17 years ago, they went up to a place upstate, New Rochelle, and it was a gentleman named Arnold Constable. And he owned a place called Constable's, which was the first department stores on the East Coast.
Okay.
And they were around, I think the last one actually closed in like 87. And they were around for 150 years or 100 years or whatever. And he was a crazy millionaire. And up in New Rochelle, he built a house, which, you know, they call a house, but when you see photos of
mansion.
It, it's a castle.
Castle?
A castle.
Is it like those things up in, yeah, like the Rhode Island, like, yeah. Like those type of things?
Right? Yeah.
Like,
and when they gutted it, they left all the walls, and it turned into the, I forgot, some school, like some college now. I mean, the house turned into a college.
Oh, it's that big.
It's that big.
Right.
So, but some of the house, all the whole house had like a Gothic dining room and a Roman baths, and it was all themed because he was crazy and a millionaire. But
what
he
you
had, I would say a billionaire. And he just out of nowhere decided to have an Oriental study, as bad as that is to say. And he flew, I don't know how they got there.
Oriental.
Yeah, Oriental. But,
Tales from the East.
But I did a lot of research, and we found this guy. He started carving wood in the 1850s, and he died in the 1890s. But he did it. We did a lot of research on him, and it's all hand-carved. A lot of it's hand-carved mahogany, and it was... You know, we saw a mantelpiece, and we're like, oh, we want that. And they're like, oh, it's part of a set. And we're like, okay, well, we want the set. And we're like, well, the set's actually part of a room. And so we bought a lot. We bought the room. We bought the whole study, which is just...
And you just...
Well, I mean, we did some good stuff to it. We kept some pieces, and we... It looks amazing. It's definitely going to be a restaurant that... I've never seen a restaurant that looks like this before.
I'm so excited. And so... It's great to have something that reflects both the aesthetic and both like the room itself and then the menu. I know we touched on the pad thai, but talk to us more about the menu. Like, what are some of the unique things that are not even like the, I recognize this from another sort of like greasy spoon?
I mean, one of my favorite things is when I was working in Chicago, is one of my chefs turned me on to like one bite salads.
And what?
There's ideas of the, it's like Thai or it's Laos. They have these little, like, they put on a pergola leaf or a betel nut leaf, and they put a piece of dried shrimp, a piece of like a piece of tamarind, a piece of lime that has the rind on it, coconut, wait, a little bit of chili.
Is the lime like macerated or anything?
No, it's whole with their rind and everything. So it's like kind of like almost like a bar snack, but you roll it up and you just kind of chew on it. And for me, that was very indicative of that idea of Southeast Asian food having salty, sweet, bitter, sour, all in one. So that's on the menu. I wanted to be fun with it a little bit, and I did Korean fried chicken's on the menu.
Can you share the process?
Absolutely. I mean, I think my Korean fried chicken is definitely different from the traditional. Mine's marinated in yogurt, some spices, Korean chili flake, a little fish sauce. Then we take it, I'm very open with our recipes. So it's like rice flour batter once in a lower oil, then take it out, cool it. And then on the pickup, you really high oil, rice flour, fish sauce, chilies, and rice flour batter, and then fried again.
Wow.
And it gets really, really crispy. And we're doing it, you know, my kind of American take on that is to pair it with what's seasonal. And I like really spicy foods with, you know, kind of a fruit or a sweet element. So we're doing, you know, autumn pears or, you know, pears in autumn. Mm-hmm. And then in the summertime, we're doing peaches or watermelon.
And then let's talk, since we have John here, the bar menu, the drinks, which are now, you know, is equally important any restaurant opening up. How are those playing with the menu? What's this, you know, as the beverage director, what are you looking for to make your own different take on, you know, cocktails?
They'll be delicious, and they'll be made fast.
Okay. All right.
Fast.
No, I mean, like, of course, just because I want to do some plays on some, like, you know, traditional, like, Asian, not so much, I hate saying the word tiki, but some Asian cocktails.
Mm-hmm.
We're using a lot of Asian boozes, some Asian fruits. There'll definitely be specialty cocktails, but then a lot of just the basics and the stuff that people that I know in the neighborhood like, and the people that I mean, drinks that people just like. I mean, I'm not going to go so crazy that people are like, I don't know what to order. I don't even know what that is.
Are you trying to make it where there is going to be like a drink like bar snacks type of thing going on, or is it really a whole come and sit down full meal?
It's definitely going to be there'll be a restaurant and a bar.
Yeah.
Like, we really want to keep the bar. The bar is going to be beautiful and amazing. And when the restaurant closes, the bar is going to stay open. And we want to definitely have
like a bar scene.
Yeah, come on in and have a drink. Like, a bar scene. We're going to have a little secret hidden TV, so when the game's on, you could still, like, maybe you don't can't like pay attention the whole game, but you'll always be able to check scores.
Chicago Bears or Jets?
Oh, Bears. Always. I told me and
Redskins,
John.
Redskins, baby.
We've been arguing about this. And, by the way, let me plug him real quick. Metro Mix, best bartender in New York City, John Bush. Vote for him if you can.
Vote for me.
Get up on him. Vote for him.
I'm determined to win.
Now, what's going to be filling this the ears while they're in Taldy? Is it going to be your love of hip-hop that's
we talk about this a lot, and my joke is, and it might not work out the way I'd love it to work out, but I want every awesome hip-hop artist B-side playing all the time.
So yep. Who's going to curate that?
No hits. Well,
I think we all are. I mean, I definitely have a very good... I feel like I... No, actually, I have a terrible sense of music, and I love terrible music, but when it comes to hip-hop, I feel like my ear is good, and I'm definitely a generation of the early 90s hip-hop gen, and I'm a Native Tongues dude. I'm a, you know, De La Soul, Tribe Called Quest, Gangstar. I'm one of those kids. So it's a little bit conscious, you know, a little KRS-One. Throw that in there in the mix. I'm a generation of that, but I also, one of my biggest influences, especially coming to New York, was Biggie. Mm. And, you know, repping Brooklyn and
does he have any B-sides?
I don't know.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's like,
I know.
I don't want to just go be playing the hits. I want somebody to be sitting there and that knows and go, holy moly, they're playing this. I love this song.
Yeah,
playing this song.
Yeah. No, I mean, nothing is worse than going and being like, oh, great. Like, this could be just curated, serious. Like, it's, you like to know that the love is going in as far as the music.
Exactly. Yeah. And for, I think for me, it's a huge influence in what I'm doing. I mean, it's like I'm a generation. That is my generation. So,
do you cook a lot to music?
Always. If I'm, it's one of two things. It's either I'm cooking to music or I'm cooking and watching sports. But
music in the kitchen?
Yeah.
Like during service?
Not during service, but during prep. During service, it just needs to. There's so much.
It's an open kitchen, so it's gonna be a little hard to be blazing. Music.
Yeah. There's a chef's counter at the in the kitchen, so it's an open kitchen. So it's a chef's counter, so it's gonna be a little hard for us to be blazing.
How many seats for the chef's counter?
Probably six.
Yes.
And what's your? I mean, where can one find you on a line on a busy Saturday night? What?
I'm gonna be right there.
Yeah, right there.
I'll be on the grill. I'll probably be on the grill expediting.
Awesome. That's great. I mean, it really shows the love for cooking that you're gonna be.
I just gotta get back to it, man. I mean, being in a big box restaurant at Budokan was a lot of checks and balances and making sure food was done correctly, but not actually executing the food, and I just want to get back to just really cooking the food and being part of it and having my hands on it every day.
Awesome. Well, we can't wait to get in there and eat. It opens, the date is?
Mid-November. No date, but mid-November we're shooting for.
November. Website?
TaldyBrooklyn.com. www.TaldyBrooklyn.com.
And reservations or anything like that?
No reservations, but we're for parties of six or more. We're doing reservations. We will do reservations,
and we'll do large party reservations.
Yeah,
also, we have a great space for if anybody want to have a birthday party or any sort of party.
Book a private event. Yeah,
yeah, and we'll do a whole pig for you or something.
I'm gonna do a hip hop seaside party.
I like
do
it.
That, man. Do that. We're gonna be doing
Edge of the Record
crab boils and lobster boils. And
you just said the two things that we can't eat, but yeah, that's great. We'll come there and with EpiPens ready to go.
How about a big pig roast then?
That sounds
whole
fantastic.
Pig.
All right, well, Dale and John, congratulations on the restaurant. We can't wait to be there. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
Stick around, eat some pizza.
Awesome. We will.
We got one more track off of the Worst Music Ever comp, a Midnight Magic cover of Push for Love. And then we got Nathaniel J. of Soho 808. We're going to talk about New York and hear some music and the new release that's coming out on this comp. You are listening to Snacky Tunes.
Oh God, I love Midnight Magic. Why don't you send one of those mics over to your face? You know, even though I said I was going to eat pizza today, I still had a couple slices on top of the pork shank.
It was good. Thanks for the pizza.
Of course. So you're listening to Snacky Tunes, the Disco Jams, Monday morning, never a bad thing. What was that track that we just listened to?
That's the Midnight Magic rework of Push for Love.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah.
They're...
It's really cool, like wild, yeah. Frenzied version. Yeah, it's really awesome.
We have Nathaniel from Soho 808, one half of the pair. I'm going to give a shout out to your partner.
Yeah, Dave Robertson. He's not here, but he's always here in spirit.
That's really nice.
Yeah, man.
That's really nice.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't you give our listeners a little bit of background on how you guys met up and started writing music together?
Okay, it's getting not infamous, but it's sort of getting there because a lot of people have actually heard this. We met at like a gross after hours party in Brooklyn. It was a Resolute party on a boat that, you know, these like Terry Francis was playing. It was just this filthy like 9 a.m. scenario.
On a boat?
On a boat, yeah. But it doesn't actually sail. It's just sort of docked. And
oh, I heard about this. It was like last summer? 2 summers ago?
2 or 3 or something, yeah. They have them pretty regularly, the boat with no captain. But
are they illegal?
No.
They just go on boat.
I don't know. Whatever. I'm sure they don't want the cops to turn up, you know, but...
You know who's not listening to this show?
Who's not?
Police.
Yeah, right.
You can just tell the story.
I really don't know if they have a permit for that type of stuff, but I guess I always assume like you're doing a party on a boat and it's docked on some river in Queens because like nightclubs are so hard. That's why so much of that stuff's been pushed to a boat and on a river in Queens somewhere. But Dave was just there, man, and we just started talking right away. I think I actually just walked up to him and was like, "You disgust me. What are you doing on this boat at 9 a.m. drinking beer and like you've been up on? You're gross." And we just sort of started going back and forth right away, and I was like. We just had a similar sense of humor.
That's awesome. So then did the dance and things like that, and you were both DJs beforehand.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Dave in Sydney. He's from Sydney. And me here in New York for a while now.
So you guys have only had really like a handful of releases out, but they've been received so well by some really great labels. What just take us through the discography, because it's such a short one.
Yes, the first track was... first track was called From New York With Love. It was like last year. It was a digital thing. But then a couple of, two releases that we had, it got picked up for like big compilations. Eli from Soul Clap. The Soul Clap guys put one of our tracks on there. Number 19, Art Department's label mix that they did for them. And then Jamie Jones, who Eli from Soul Clap we know, but Jamie Jones we didn't know. So that one's kind of seemed like a sort of fortuitous, like all of a sudden it was on this Fabric compilation, which... is like pretty high profile, you know, in this
it's
little
really world. High profile.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah.
Did you know before it came out, or like they're just like?
It's like one of those things where Jamie might use your track for this compilation, right. You know, and is that cool? And then you have to do all this paperwork like that you don't normally do, sign this stuff. It's cool to put the track on them, but you know, you never know because he's narrowed it down to like whatever 50 tunes or something. But then. We figured it out when we saw it on like Resident Advisor or something, the track list, and there we were.
So for something like that, when that, you know, Soul Clap and that comes out, you know, as being young producers, do you see an increase in work, increase in bookings, or is it just like a piece of the puzzle that then adds to, you know, the overall project?
It was both. Both of those really helped. They both happened like pretty quickly. Both, a lot of people started like writing to us to do mixes and stuff. And gigs and stuff. Yeah, I mean, yeah, both of those, all of those really helped. You don't make a ton of money from stuff like that. Not that that matters, but it really helped, yeah. A lot of people were like, yeah.
That's awesome. So how did you, how did you get involved with Roy and Worst?
Roy, can we shout out Roy? Roy Dank is the man. What a rad dude.
Whatever that dude touches turns to the worst.
Yeah, the absolute worst.
Absolute worst. Worst ever.
He heard some tracks of ours. I think I'm not actually sure how they got to him, but it was a few channels where they could have, and he heard them, and he really liked Reach, which we'll play. Which we played at the beginning of play, which was a track we did with Sophia, who's one of our singers, a girl that sings for us. She's really great too. Roy really liked it, and we were just like super psyched at the time because like he's like a bit of a legend, local legend, you know.
I would agree.
Yeah,
I would agree.
So that was, that was that. He likes the track, and we've done a couple parties with him. Oh, that's where a couple weeks ago, we played Le Bon with Roy, the Worst music release party, and we've done a couple parties with him. We just get along, like, DJ-wise, Submercer, done some parties with him. It's just, like, been a really awesome relationship, really.
Why don't we get you on the decks? Yeah. So we're going to start with Reach.
I'll play it. Yeah, because Roy will have my butt if I don't if we don't play it in its entirety. But so, no, and that's not why. But you know,
no, but
yeah,
it's yeah, the yeah. single.
Yeah, yeah,
it's why you're here.
It is. Yeah, yeah, that
so,
is. Yeah,
so we should hear it. All right, so we'll let you get set up.
Okay, cool. Thanks.
Yeah. So we'll have Nathaniel back at the end of his set. But you were listening to Snacky Tunes. If you like this, make sure to check out our podcast. Go to iTunes and search for Snacky Tunes. We're the only guys there with that name. And here we go. Live set.
Oh my God, that's the greatest promotion I've ever heard from you.
Here we go. I'm not afraid to
Live set from Soho 808. That was the track you were talking about before, right? The other track that's out?
Yeah, that last track that I just played is out right now on a label called Mystery Meat, vinyl only, edits label. That's out right now, too. Yeah, you can get it.
That bass is...
You can get it, actually. That, and you can get the first EP off the Worst Comp with Reach on it. You can get at Halcyon. Now they're in stock. So go to Halcyon in Brooklyn and support your local.
Support your local. I mean, the bass on that thing, when it comes in, I can only imagine... 2:30 in the morning, drop the tune, it's awesome. What else did you play in that set?
I played the track before that was a new remix from this guy, Eddie Mars. Actually, I'll shout him out too, because he's a really like exciting local guy. Eddie Mars remix on Under the Shade, he's the man. And before that, our track from the Worst Comp, Breach.
So upcoming gigs, next couple weeks?
Upcoming gigs... this Saturday, actually, if anyone's in the market for a downtown pretty sick Halloween party on the 29th Saturday, we're doing Submercer. Soho 808 with our buddies from Caviar Disco, Beto, and his buddy Travis at Submercer. And Submercer is like one of our favorite like little spots, so it's going to be a rad party.
It's a good place to be behind the decks.
Man. Yeah, though it's a tiny, tiny booth of four DJs. Yeah,
yeah, but I'm saying it's better being behind the decks than out in the crowd there sometimes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And Worst Music Ever Comp comes out, I think, like a couple weeks.
The first EP is out now on vinyl.
Okay.
As for the digital stuff, I don't think it's out yet, but the first EP is out now.
But if you want to listen to it, you can actually go over to soundcloud.com/theworst. And the whole comp is up there for listening. And find you guys, Facebook, SoundCloud.
Soho 808, all one word. Facebook / Soho 808, SoundCloud / Soho 808.
Well, thanks for joining us.
Sure, man. I'm actually going to play the last track I play. I'm going to play is a brand new track. It's unreleased as yet.
Awesome. Title? Yet?
Right or Wrong.
Awesome. Well, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, man.
Next week on Snacky Tunes, we got Computer Magic in live. And... stay tuned, and thanks for listening to another episode of Snacky Tunes. And a quick shout out to the guys
from the Hey Try This blog. It's just heytrythisblog.com. Met him last week. Super rad dudes. Check it out. Super, super good blog. Thanks for listening.
I'm not afraid to lately things have been kind of slow, so I just gotta roll on and do what I know. I haven't felt so good in some time. Oh, you know we all get low, but I just wanna hold on and do what I love. Seen your face in a while. Lately things have been kind of slow, so I just gotta roll on and do what I know.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening. The following is a public service announcement from Food Karma. To kick off the New York City Meat Week in style, Meat with a Twist will bring together the best chefs and mixologists for a cocktail food pairing party on November 7th from 6 to 10 p.m. at City Winery. Meat with a Twist features 10 cocktails paired with 10 chef selections highlighting local, sustainably grown meat such as duck, lamb, chicken, pork, beef, bison, and ostrich. The party will launch a week's worth of events throughout the city that celebrate the slow food movement bringing sustainable meats to our tables. Again, that's November 7th from 6 to 10 p.m. at City Winery. Updates, tickets, and more information are available at meatweeknyc.com.
Slap your face! Slap your friend! Get sexy, kids! Do-do-do-do! Stinks in here! Smells like meat. Rotten meat.